Should have said that right, right? Now we can truly call it the Bina building.
We can sing and clap, girls, not in kids.
Absolutely. Okay, so what I want to do today is actually something to relate it to the Parsha, but it's a fundamental concept, which the Rebbe develops in a Sicha. It's an idea that we've talked about before, but the Rebbe develops in a very interesting way, so I'm going to do it. It's about Rotsu and Shuv. I don't know if you know that principle, but we'll get there. So let's do the Parsha context first of all. So we know this week's Parsha is Achrei Mois. It starts off, it's the laws of Yom Kippur, essentially, in the beginning, where Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Aaron that he can go into the Kodesh HaKadosh on Yom Kippur, and the Avodah, the service, and all the Korbanos, and so on. But the way the Parsha starts is that it's Achrei Mois Shnei B'nei Aaron, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, and Hashem gives them this whole thing that the Kohen Gadol has to be very careful when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and so on. So the Rebbe points out like this. Let's get a bit of a timeline here. The story of the two sons of Aaron, right? First of all, it happened on Rosh Chodesh Nisan when the Mishkan was erected. In the Chumash, it takes place 3.5 parshas away, which is, or 2.5 parshas ago, which is Parsha Shmini, right? So we have Shmini, Tazria, Metzora, and then this week's Parsha. So it happens then, and then it's referenced again at the beginning of this week's Parsha. Okay. Now we find Midrashim all sorts of reasons why the two sons of Aaron died, right? Nadav and Avihu. The Chumash reads that they brought fire that was foreign to Hashem, and then there's Midrashim about exactly what the Avera was, but we'll leave those Midrashim aside, because what we find in the Torah is two specific warnings that were given right after they died, or one is recorded right after, one in this week's Parsha, which give us a clue about what their Avera was, or what they were doing, right? Okay, so let's have a look. The first one is in Parsha Shmini. So if you look at number 1 in your thing, Parsha Shmini, it says right after they died, they just finished the 7 days of inauguration. It was the 8th day, Vayibayam HaShmini. It was a great celebration. It was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and then they go and bring this Ketores, this incense, and they die. Right after that, Hashem says the following. Hashem speaks to Aaron, actually. And he says the following. It's number 1. He says, a very important mitzvah, one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, that when Koyanim do their service, Yayin v'sheichar al tishtu, they should not drink wine, or sort of like a beer. It's not mamish beer like we have today, but it's a kind of a beer. Alcohol, basically. Ata ubonecha itoch, you and your children with you, bevoy achem el oil moel, when you come to the Mishkan, and then you won't die, and this is an eternal statute for all generations. Basically, that a Kohen, not only a Kohen Gadol, but generally a Kohen, cannot serve in the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash when they're intoxicated. This also is extended to other things as well, like a Rav is not supposed to paskan a Shaila when he's intoxicated, all these kind of things. Okay. So, the implication is, and this fits very nicely into a Medrash, that the Medrash says that the sin of Nadav and Avihu was shtuya yayin. They were intoxicated. They went in to bring Ketores to Hashem. The problem was that they were under the influence. They drank wine or whatever, right?
But they didn't have that law already.
Okay, but Hashem is saying it wasn't correct and it wasn't appropriate. And yeah, it's a good question. Technically, they have the law, they have the law. But maybe it's just a consequence, like it doesn't fit with certain Western English. Hashem says, let me explain to you what happened and make sure you guys don't do this ever again, right? Okay. So that's one warning that's given right after thing that. Okay. The next warning, or at least the implied warning, is given in this week's Parsha. And let's see how the Parsha begins. So let's have a look at number 2. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe. Achrei Moshe Shnei B'nei Aaron, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu after the death of Aaron. Now remember, it's being recorded now like 2.5 parshas later. But he spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu after the death of Aaron. Bekorvosam livnei Hashem, when they came close to Hashem, vayomusu, and they died. And then what does the pasuk continue? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, daber el Aaron, achicha, speak to your Aaron, your brother. Ve'al yovoy bechol eis al ha-kodesh. You tell him he cannot come whenever he wants to the kodesh ha-kodoshim, he beis la-poreches, which is on the other side of the curtain hiding the Aaron kodesh. El Panei HaKaporis, where the cover of the Oren is, the Kruvim, Asher Ala Oren, which was on the Ark. And then if he adheres to this, V'lo Yomus, he won't die. Why? Ki Be'onon Eroi Ala HaKaporis. I will reveal myself in a special cloud. That's one idea, that's one way to interpret the pasuk. Basically, the next pasuk says, Bezois, there's only one time that he can come, it's on Yom Kippur, it's with certain sacrifices, certain preparation, and then he may come to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. But he can't come whenever he wants, nor can the Kohanim. Okay. So there's an interesting Rashi on this. Let's have a look at number three. Because these laws of Yom Kippur and not to go any time to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, only certain places and certain circumstances, says the Pasuk, that was given after the death of the two sons of Aaron. Says Rashi, Mal Talmud, after the hyphen, Ma Talmud Loimar. What's this trying to teach us? So Rashi gives a very famous moshel. Hoya Rebbe Lozer ben Azaria, so Rebbe Lozer ben Azaria, moshle moshel. He used to give the following parable, the following analogy. L'choyle shenichnas eitzel roife. A sick person went to a doctor. Omar leit, the doctor said to him, atoichel tznoin, don't eat radish, atishka v'tachav, don't lie where it's damp. And he didn't listen and he died. Bo'acher, the next guy came to the doctor, sick man. Omar lo, and he said to him, Al toichol tzoinen, don't eat anything that's very cold. Sorry, tzoinen was the word cold, I was mixing up the word snoim. Anyway, don't eat anything that's cold. Atishka batachav, don't lie where it's damp. Shaloi tomus, that you shouldn't die, kederech shemeis ployni. Like the first guy died. I'm warning you, the last guy didn't listen to me, and he died. So, don't do it, says Rashi. Obviously, the second one is going to be much more alert and diligent than the first guy, because he's got a warning. It didn't work when the first guy did it, right? Lakach nema, that's why the pasuk says, Acharei Mois Shnei Bnei Aaron. After the Hashem said this mitzvah after the sons of Aaron. In other words, don't do it, because if you do, you will die like the sons of Aaron did. In other words, what's the implication here? Avera, so to speak, of the Not of an Aviyu is more like it says in the Pasuk. They went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim when they weren't supposed to. They became very close to Hashem and they died. And therefore Hashem comes and says, now don't go any time. There's only one time you can go on Yom Kippur with certain conditions. Yeah? Okay. So essentially those are the two warnings. So the Rebbe asks the question, why are they so separated, these two warnings? Right? Why does the one come right after the story in the Torah? I mean, they both come right after the story. They were both given right after the story, but one is recorded only in Shmini, right after it happened, right? In fact, doing that is an interruption because there's many mitzvahs there in Shmini about what they're doing in the Beis HaMikdash and how they're supposed to be inaugurating the Beis HaMikdash and so on. But Hashem stops and he says, no, let's just get this out of the way. They went in, they were intoxicated, let me give a mitzvah, no one should drink wine when they go into the Beis HaMikdash, right? But this one, the one about not going, Yove Eis, not going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that seems to be with a very big interruption. First we have the completion of Parashat Shmini, and in Parashat Shmini itself we have all the mitzvahs of kosher animals and non-kosher animals, kosher birds and non-kosher birds, fish and so on. Then we have the dinim of Tuma and Tyra, right? Impurity, impurity, and so on. Right. Yeah? So the question is why are they so separated? Now, it's not a problem chronologically, because we have a rule. That ein muktim u'me'ucher ba'Torah. There's no chronological order to the Torah, right? In other words, it's not a problem that it says it in Parshas Acharei Mois, when really it happened in Parshas Shmini. That's not a problem. But when we say that, the Rebbe always points this out, when we say there's no chronological order to the Torah, and things can historically be out of order, it doesn't. But there's still a reason for it. In other words, Hashem doesn't stum make it out of order. Right? He doesn't have to make it out of order. Right? He doesn't have to make it out of order. I mean, sorry, he doesn't have to make it in order, I should say. Right? But when he makes it out of order, there's a reason. Right? There's a reason. Okay. So I'm going to quickly summarize for Goldie, just the two things. So we're talking about the sons of Aaron that went into the Kodesh HaKadosh and brought their fire and they died. And there's two reasons recorded in the Torah. Two warnings. One was that they shouldn't be intoxicated when they do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, which was given right away in Parashas Shemini, just after they died. And the second one is about not going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever you want, only in Yom Kippur and so on, which is given in this week's Parasha, as the Torah says, Acharei Moshe Nebnei Aaron. And the Rebbe's question is, why there's such a gap between the two instructions? Okay, now, it's interesting to, first of all, just take note, before we get into the concept in Chassidus that we're going to go through, but the Rebbe points out the following, that there is a certain order to the parshas after Shemini. Because I want to learn with you a Rashi in the hand that is number 4. So, you know, you have all the animals, the laws of the animals in what you have in Parashat Shemini is you have all the laws of kashrus, right? Which fish are kosher, which animals are kosher, which fish are not kosher. Tomei, tohu. And it uses the expression of lahavdil bein hatomei u bein hatoher, that it's to separate between tomei and toher, kosher, not kosher, etc. Then at the end of Shemini, all the way at the end of Shemini, it gives a little bit about impurities of the body. There's all kinds of different impurities that come from the body, like a nidor, or a zova, or a zov, and different things, discharges and all kinds of stuff that can make a person tomei. That's also at the end of Parashat Shemini. Then we have Parshas Tazria Metzora, which essentially starts off with the laws of childbirth, and then it goes into the laws of tzaras, of leprosy, all different types of lashon hara and things like that. There's an interesting Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Tazria. Have a look at number 4, which says Isha ki Tazria, talking about a woman who conceives and gives birth. Says Rashi, Omar Rab Samloi, right? Rav Samloi said, "K'shem sheyitzirosai shel Adam, achar kol behemo chay v'oif." The creation of man, the creation of the human being, came after the creation of all the animals, right? But my Sibereshis at the beginning of the creation of the world, kach toyrosai nispasha achar toyras behemo chay v'oif. So too, the laws of the human being, childbirth, taras, and so on, were also given after the laws of the animals, right? So basically, it's the model where you have the laws of kashrus, which is all the laws of animals, all animals, fish, all animals given their fish, animals, birds, and creepy crawlies, like insects, basically, right? And then you have the laws of people, like the tumas of the bodily tumas, the childbirth tumah, and the taras, right? Says Rashi, why is it that order? Because it's a famous Rashi, because just like in the creation of the man, the animals were created and then person was created, so too in the laws, we have the laws of animals and then the laws of the human being, right? Which Rebbe points out is a little bit difficult, actually, this Rashi, because, I mean, we're halfway through the Torah. There's like, right? There's tons of laws that were given to the human being before Parashat Shemini, right? I mean, eating matzah, I don't know, putting on tefillin, hundreds of laws are given before. What, it's not like now all of a sudden the laws are coming, right? But what we'll see at the end of the sicha, at the end of this concept, we'll see that a specific type of laws we're talking about. And that's what Rashi is referring to. Okay. So let's get back to the question, why the two consequences of Aaron's son's death, Nadav and Avihu, and the two warnings that came afterwards, one not to drink alcohol when you go into the Beis HaMikdash, And the second is not to enter the Beis HaMikdash whenever you want, only on specific days like Yom Kippur, with certain conditions. Why they recorded in the Torah? Why is there this break between the two? Between the two warnings. Yeah, we clear? Okay. So. Well, they weren't obligated in kashrus. Yeah, that's true. Can I say about lots of things? Did they keep the Torah before the Torah was given? That's a famous question. Our tradition is that many people did. The Ovos, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Ovos, and Avraham Yitzchok Yaakov, Sarif Korachalei, they all kept the Torah before it was given. But that doesn't mean they had the obligation. In fact, one of the reasons we eat milk on Shavuos is because the Yidden ate treif before Matan Torah. And they didn't have the laws of kashrus, and then they suddenly became obligated to be a frum Jew, and they didn't have kelim, they didn't have vessels, they couldn't shecht meat, they did the whole thing, right? They couldn't kasher yet, whatever. When they came back from Matan Torah, they ate cheesecake. They had milk. They could do. Okay, that's one of the many reasons we eat milk on Shavuos. Okay, so like this. So the Rebbe introduces the very famous idea, which we've talked about many times, and it's written many times, but over here it's actually brought in a different way altogether, which is beautiful. But what really the Aveira of Nadav and Avihu was, right? So there's the famous Orach Chaim HaKadosh. The Orach Chaim was a commentary on Chumash that the Rebbe brings very often. His name is Reb Chaim Ben Attar. He lived in the time of the Baal Shem Tov. They actually never saw each other, but had an amazing connection. All kinds of stories about the connection. They had a spiritual connection. He was a great Kabbalist, and he wrote a Pirush, a commentary on the Torah called Orach Chaim. Incidentally, fun fact, he didn't have any sons, he wrote it for his daughters. And he used to learn the Parsha of the Week with his daughters, and that's where this commentary came from. Obviously, very learned and mystical daughters, because it's quite a difficult commentary, right? All right. And he says a famous thing, because if you look back at number two, the second pasuk, sorry, the first pasuk, the wording in our parasha is that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu after the death of the sons of Aaron, when they came close to Hashem and they died. What do you mean they come close to Hashem? They didn't have very, they obviously weren't that close to Hashem, right? So Aruch Chaim has this very, very famous piece, which is reflected in Chassidus a lot, that actually their Avera was that they came close to Hashem. That's exactly what happened. They embarked on a very, very spiritual experience, Kabbalistic experience, I don't know what it was, through their Keteris, and they came very close to the divine revelation of Hashem. And he has, but he has a beautiful line there where he goes to 10 adjectives that they said that he says that they came close and they felt the mesikus, arevus, ne'imus, I don't remember all the rest of them, but the sweetness, the pleasantness, the beauty, the pleasure of Hashem's presence, which made them become so close to Hashem that that's all they wanted to be, is one with Hashem. So the neshamas left the body and they expired, and boom, they died. Right? In other words, the Avera was that they died. That's the Avera. It wasn't a death of a punishment. It was a death of coming too close to Hashem, and they expired. The neshama left their body. So Chassidus explains, using a principle which we've talked about many times, and that's the principle of Rotsu and Shuv. Rotsu means when a Yid has such a thirst to cling to Hashem, and if he's on the level, he embarks on that experience. I mean, you can have it in many levels, but basically it's a detachment from this world, running away from this world to become close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the point where it comes to a point where it's possible that he's coming so close that his neshama could literally leave his body. Right? Rotsu. Now, which isn't a bad thing, by the way. Every Jew needs to experience that on some level. But the way that Hashem created the world, the way Hashem gave us the Torah, because ultimately the purpose of creation is to make a dwelling place for Hashem in this world, so every rotsu means comes the word to run towards Hashem, right? Every rotsu must be followed by a shuv, a return. Meaning, yes, I'm very close, I'm almost going to expire, but then I know that's not really what Hashem wants me to do, even though I can't stand being in this physical world where Hashem is not revealed. But nevertheless, I'm now coming very close, But now I must go back and go down to the world and serve Hashem in this world, because that's what Hashem wants, right? Exodus explains that you must have one without the other is no good. Why? Because actually the experience of Rotsu is very important. Because even though we say that the tachlis, the purpose of serving Hashem, is in this world, the physical world, but if we just get comfortable with this world, we won't end up serving Hashem. We're actually, the idea is you're supposed to serve Hashem in this world by being uncomfortable with this world. And therefore to know that this world in its own right is actually nothing, and the pleasures of this world are actually empty, and therefore I must be in this world, but I'm not comfortable yet. My whole purpose is to bring Hashem into the world, right? So every once in a while, when we're getting a bit comfortable, we actually have to become uncomfortable. And then we have the ruts, so that's why Yiddishkeit is structured altogether. We have spiritual experiences, davening and learning, we have Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we have Shabbos even, right? The purpose of them is to leave those experiences and come back to the world, but we have these experiences of detachment from the world because we need to feel that once in a while, right? So you can't have a shuv without a rotzu, because the shuv, if you have only shuv, what will happen is you won't serve Hashem in this world, you just love the world. Loving the world is not going to help you serve Hashem, right? On the other hand, the rotzu without the shuv, you're missing the point. Okay. So that's what happened with them. What happened with them is they had the rotzu without the shuv. And that's every year needs to know, you have to have a rotzu on whatever level it is. I mean, if you're a tzaddik, you have a real rotzu. If you're not, then you have experiences of rotzu where you're detaching from the world, you're running away from the world. But it's a good thing temporarily in order for you then to return to the world, right? Just to give you a little bit of an example of this, there's a story of the Alter Rebbe with the son of the Mizritch Magid. Mizritch Magid was known as Rabbi Avrom HaMalach. Rabbi Avrom, the angel. Why was he called Rabbi Malach? Because he was so spiritual, like he wasn't like in this world. He's like, was totally, you know. And the Alter Rebbe, when he came to learn with Mizritch Magid, he got to know Rabbi Avrom HaMalach, and they made a chavrusa. I'll just tell you the whole story, it's just interesting knowledge. And the Alter Rebbe, when he came to the Magid, before he came close to Mizritch Magid, Alter Rebbe was already an unbelievable Talmud Chacham in the revealed part of Torah. Even in the hidden part of Torah, but that wasn't his main part. Right? Alter Rebbe was known as a Goyen, he was a halachic ruler, he was a Poisek, he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he was, yeah. And Rav Ram Malach was known as an expert in the esoterics of Torah. So they made a chavrus, and the deal was that they'll learn 3 hours, 3 hours. 3 hours, the Alter Rebbe will teach him the revealed part of Torah, teaching, meaning he'll share his expertise. And 3 hours, Rabbi Ram Malach will share his expertise to the Alter Rebbe in the Pnimiyus HaTorah, in the esoterics of Torah. Okay. So the story goes that when they would learn the Pnimiyus HaTorah, the Alter Rebbe would trick. He would change the clock without him looking. So there should be more time. he stole extra time for himself. How are you allowed to do that? Isn't that dishonest? So we know that there's a famous concept in the Torah that everything the Torah made prohibited, sometimes also mutar, right? So for example, it says in the Gemara, like he says, you're not allowed to have blood, but you need liver. Liver essentially is blood, that's what it is. You're not allowed to marry a sister-in-law. A woman can't marry a brother-in-law, I mean, though her brother, her husband's brother, but there's a mitzvah of yibum, but it's a mitzvah, all these kind of things, right? Why? Because everything has a purpose. So therefore, the Zohar says that stealing is also mutter. When stealing, to steal Torah, you're allowed. You're allowed to steal Torah. Okay. So the story goes, they became very, very close, and they did a lot of things together. And one Motzei Shabbos, they decided they're going out into the field, not just to learn Pnimiyus HaTorah, but they're going to experience it. They're going to have some sort of transcendent experience. And they went into the field, and they drew a circle, and they went in, and they, I don't know what they did, because I never did it. And actually, they almost died, both of them. They almost, not died, meaning the neshama almost left their body. And at the last moment, the Alter Rebbe pulled Rabbi Avraham Malach out of the circle, and they were both, okay. A little bit later that night, was the Motzei Shabbos. Rabbi Avraham Malach comes into the Alter Rebbe to visit, and he sees he's eating a bagel and butter. That's the story. A bagel mit putter, that's how the story goes. He looks at him in deep shock, and he says to him, "Ad kadei kach, like, this is what you're doing after this experience? Like a bagel and butter?" Alter Rebbe says, "That's the point. The point of the whole experience is the bagel and the butter. Obviously, not like some of us eat bagel and butter, or eat pizza, or anything else. to elevate the bagel and the batter, just to eat it to serve Hashem, whatever on the highest level. But it's in the Gashmias. That's the main thing. Okay. So the famous lesson always from Parshas Akrim is that Yiddishkeit has Rotsu and Shuv, but Rotsu without Shuv is no good. You have to have the Rotsu, but the Rotsu must then result in a Shuv, because the purpose of Hashem in this world. Okay. That's a famous thing. What the Rebbe adds in this Sikha is something very beautiful. He says the following. He said that there's two reasons. If a person has a rotzu, it can come from two sources. Right? One is that a person appreciates the depth of godliness. He's learned so much, he's holy, he's a person is sensitive and he has a sensitivity to spirituality. And the more he's engaged in spirituality, the more he realizes that there's so much more, right? So he keeps wanting to be attracted to it, and he keeps running towards it. Which in a way, according to the Orach Chaim, that's exactly what happened to Nadav and Avihu. These are people who understood spirituality. And the closer they got that ne'imus, sumasikus, and arevus, all that, they understood it, and they just kept on moving towards it. And that's the Ratzu. And then what happened was, it became a Ratzu without a Shuv. So that's one cause, or one trigger, to create a rotzu, even if it's a good rotzu, with a shuv, but that's one pathway. The second is a complete opposite cause. And that is, it's opposite extreme. It's someone who's more engaged in the world and starts to understand how empty the world is. It's not so much running towards God, it's about running away from the emptiness of the world. Same result, but it's running away from the end of the world, right? And becomes like, it's written, the Friedrich Rebbe talks about this, like with Tshuva. He says it becomes such like the penny drops, and a person understands that he's like, it's a life of complete emptiness compared to something higher, right? So there suddenly becomes this amazing urgency to run away from it and to run towards something else that is more worth it. But the basis of that rotzu is not so much being attracted to the greatness and the sweetness of Hashem's revelation, but it's more about running away from the emptiness of this world. Continues the Rebbe and says the following. That generally speaking, these are two types of people. Or you can have these two types of people could be in one person at different times in their lives or different types of experiences, right? And he divides it, what he calls, which often does in Sichas, Yoshev Oil or Baal Esek. The one who's sitting in the four corners of the Beis HaMedrash and learning, that's the person who just his whole life is dedicated to learning and davening, which there were people like that, and there are people like that. They play a role. Obviously, they have to do physical mitzvahs, they have to be alive, but their focus is more the spirituality. And then there's the people that their role and their place are what he calls Baal Esek, which literally means like a businessman, right? But it means someone who's out there in the world, right? So generally speaking, what happens is, it's the Yoshev Oil, it's the person who's closeted up in the four walls of Torah and Mitzvahs, that person's Ratzu will be triggered by being attracted to something higher. The more immersed he gets in the spiritual experience, the more he just wants more and more and more. Right? However, generally the Baal Esek, the person who's engaged in the world, the person who's working with the world every day, when that person is to experience a Ratzu, it will come more because he's just feeling so uneasy with the world and he sees the emptiness of the world and therefore wants to run away from it. Okay. Either one needs a warning not to do that. No, not to have a rotzu, but not to have a rotzu that remains a rotzu without a shuv. Right? Each one needs to be warned. A rotzu is a good thing, but you run the risk of a rotzu without a shuv, and then you'll be missing the point of serving Hashem. Sorry? Which one's the shikar? The Torah person, right? Yeah, why? So we know, so we know like this. First of all, let's talk about why they have to have a wedding. What each one has to know, right? Each one has to know like this. You might think the person is learning Torah. He thinks, listen, my role in life anyway is spirituality. That's my role in life, right? I don't do business. I'm not involved in the world. I'm a Rosh Hashiva. I don't know. I'm a Tzaddik. I'm a Rebbe. Whatever the case is, right? So what's my role in the world? My role in the world is Ruchnis. So I'm just going to keep going. If it means that I graduate to a better Ruchnis, a higher level of Ruchnis, to the point that I go to a different world of Ruchnis, then that's good, no? Because that's what I'm doing. So the warning is, no, you're wrong. Why are you wrong? Because even someone who is involved just in Ruchnis, relative Ruchnis, right? Torah and Tefillah, the real Torah, even Torah learning, is the Torah that's learned in this world. Like the Chumash tells us, Torah loy bashamayimi. We know that Tanya explains that Torah travels from its source up in Hashem's world all the way down, like the water that, you know, we learned in Tanya, like the water that flows from up to the whole thing, right? And yet, the world, the Torah was given dafke in this world to inspire Torah mitzvahs in this world, to the point where halachically we know that Torah loy bashamayimi. Not only in halacha, but even in, first of all, there's a story in the Gemara, a famous story. Doesn't bring it here. A famous story that the Torah was given to us, and there was a famous Tanru Shalach Noi about a certain oven, and there was a whole machlekes about if it's pure, if it's not pure, a very complicated halachic issue. And a war broke out in the Beis HaMedrash. I've told you this story before. And with, I think it was Rabbi Lozer, yeah? And they all said one, and he said a different thing. And he said, if I'm right, let the trees prove it, and they start to shake. If I'm right, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash start to shake, and they stood, and it was like, and all the rabbis said, too bad, sorry. The majority view is not like you. So he said, if I'm right, let a heavenly voice come out and say it. And I did. The heavenly voice came out and said, Rabbi Loz is right. His view is right. To which they said, sorry, Torah leba shemayim, Torah is not in heaven. We've given a Torah, we're supposed to do the best we can in this world, following the laws of the Torah. We have a certain view. To us, it seems like this oven is Torah, Tomei, whatever the view was, and that's how we're going to paskin, because the Torah says you follow the majority, and that's it. So Rabbi Yeshua, it says the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshua was going, he was taking a walk, and he met Eliyahu HaNavi. And he said to Eliyahu HaNavi, I want to know something. What was Hashem's response when that happened? What was God doing? Like, how did he respond to this whole, I mean, there's a yeshiva in Shemaim, they know how to learn better than us, right? It's called Masifta Drakia, the Zohar says. There's a yeshiva up in Shemaim, all the neshamas are learning Torah, right? They know better than us how to learn, and they obviously came to one conclusion, and the heavenly voice proved it, and we rejected it. What was Hashem's reaction? So he said, Hashem was smiling, and he was saying, Natschuni bonai natschuni. My children have defeated me, they've defeated me. The depth of that story is, because the purpose of Torah is to be established, evolved, and learned, and clarified in this world. And that's what was being happening. So therefore, the halacha is not what they decide in Shemayim. The halacha is what's decided here. Obviously, following the rules given in Shemayim. Right? Okay. So there, and then there's another story that brings this one in the Sicha, in the Kutei Torah. I've forgotten exactly the details, but there was a whole machlokes, it says, in Shemayim, there was a machlokes between Hashem and the yeshiva. This was a different kind of machlekes. Hashem was there, but it was an esoteric machlekes. Al Rebbe in the Kutei Torah explains what the machlekes was, like philosophically. It wasn't even a halachic thing, it was a philosophical thing, esoteric thing. And Hashem had one view, and all the other Talmidim of the Yeshiva of Shemayim have a different view. I don't know what these things mean, but that's what it says. Right? So what do they say? They have to clarify. They said, Man Noicha, who's around? Who's coming here? Who's on the way to Shemayim? Basically, who's about to die? Right? And they said, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni was one of the great Amoraim. So they said, we have to ask him. But the Pshat, the Alter Rebbe explains it, they didn't ask him once he died. They asked him just before his neshama left the body. Because it has to be clarified here. Right? So therefore, the Yoshev Oil, the one who's Rotsu, comes only because he's being attracted to a greater Ruchnistic level, has to be warned and said, no. You talk a very Ruchnistic, and you're striving for Ruchnis, and that's your whole life is Ruchnis, But even the ruchnistic world that you have to know has to be experienced dafke in this world. So therefore the ratzu is very good, but you have to have a shuv. The Baal Esek has a different problem. The Baal Esek is running away from this world because he can't stand this world. Why can't he stand this world? Because he's exposed to this world. He knows the risks of this world. He sees the value deterioration of this world. He sees the temptation of the world. He sees the challenges of the world. Right? You know what the Baditcher once said to Hashem, right? The Baditcher was a person who always advocated on behalf of the Jewish people. Always said something good about the Jewish people to the on an extreme level. So he once told Hashem, he said, "I don't know what you want from your Jewish nation." And he referenced a book called Reishis Chochma. Reishis Chochma is a very ancient Musar book that deals with the spiritual consequences of someone that goes against Hashem and gives into his own indulgences and temptations and everything like that. Right? So he says, "You know, Hashem, if you would have done it the other way around, if you would have put all the temptations of this world into a book, and all the concepts of Reishis Chochma into the world for everyone to see and to witness, they'd always do the right thing. But you didn't. You put all the stuff on Reishis Chochma, you didn't put into a book. The temptations you put for another eye. So what do you want them to do, right?" So this guy who's now having a rotsu, he's running away from this world, he knows because he says this world is risky. Why should I risk it? Let me go to a safe place, right? Let me go to a safe place. So Hashem says, no, you have to have, a rotsu has to have the shuv. It's very good to have the rotsu, very good to understand the temptations of this world for awareness, and you have to be conscious of how dangerous this world is with all of its problems. But at the end of the day is you've got to take the risk, because that's where Dura B'Tachtoinim is going to happen.
You can't run away whenever you want.
Yeah, you can't, exactly, as we'll soon see. But we'll see why the position is where it is. So, okay, yeah. Says the Rebbe, so those are the two types of Ratzu, those are the two types of warning. Those are the two warnings in the Torah. When the Torah says that you can't drink wine when you get, and we say that they went in and they were intoxicated, it doesn't mean that Nodav and Aviyah were drunk. Chas v'shalom. Yeah, I mean, the mitzvah is about not becoming drunk. But on their level, we know that yayin, wine, means exposure to very deep ideas in Torah. Nichnas yayin, wine comes in, yetze sad, secrets come out, right? Yeah? So drinking wine on a spiritual level means going deeper and deeper into the hidden parts of Torah. Why is it hidden parts of Torah? Because that's what wine is. Wine comes from a grape. You look at a grape, it's the fruit. That's all it is. But hidden within the grape is the potential to create a very important beverage, and one that can be intoxicating, very strong, right? So that's what it means. Also, yayin, the word yayin, wine, is the gematria of soid, of secret. So it's the secrets of Torah, right? So when they went into the Beis HaMikdash, they went in because they wanted just to delve deeper and deeper. On the one level, their going into the Beis HaMikdash was a rotsu, but a rotsu triggered by attraction. A rotsu triggered because they wanted to come closer and closer to Hashem, and they wanted to go deeper and deeper into the esoteric experiences of serving Hashem. Comes along and Sheh Hashem and says, "Al yayin b'sheicher al tesht. You can't drink, you can't be intoxicated. You can't become drunk to the point that you lose your consciousness, which means you lose your presence in this world." In other words, drunkenness in that sense is losing your consciousness to the point of detaching from the world completely. Losing your presence in this world. It's a good experience. You need it sometimes. But not to the point where you've lost presence in this world. By the way, just to stop there for a second, there's a very, very famous sikh of the Rebbe, a beautiful, amazing sikh, that he said one Purim. I remember when he said it, actually. Based on a Gemara in Purim about drinking. Why the Gemara says you're supposed to drink on Purim. And the Gemara tells a story there of Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira. You know the story? Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira. It says Rabbah invited Rabbi Zeira, the two great Amoroi. Rabbah invited Rabbi Zeira to come to Purim Seder. And they said L'chaim, and they drank. And they got drunk. And this is the wording of the Gemara. Rabbah got up and he shechted Rabbi Zeira. That's what the Gemara says. And it says the next day he davened for him and he brought him back to life. The next year, Rabbi again invited Rabbi Zeira to the party. And Rabbi Zeira says, "No, thank you. Miracles, I'm not going to rely on a miracle again, so I'm not coming this year." And the Rebbe has zillions of questions on this Gemara. So what does he mean? What does he mean? Shechted him? He killed him? What does that mean? Like, some say the Gemara doesn't mean he actually died. It just means he became sick. So that's the word. But the Rebbe actually proves that it can't mean that. The Rebbe actually says, I'm not going to go through the whole Sikha now, but he proves from different ways that actually means he actually died. But then if he actually died, then what do you mean? What, Rava was a murderer? What do you mean? And if it was a murderer, how was he able to bring him back to life the next day? Right? So he says like this, he did die, but not from being murdered. Drinking means they drank, which means they went into this huge experience of the deepest secrets of Torah. The problem was that Rabba, even the names you can see here, the word Rabba means great, and Zeira means small. Rabba was much greater than Rabbi Zeira, and he could handle it. And Rabbi Zeira wasn't on the level, and he got so exposed to it that he died. No, okay, he didn't die from being murdered. He died from, like not even a view, but accidentally. Not intentionally, but it was... So Rabba brought him back to life. So then the question is, if Rabba saw that happen, so why did Rabba invite him the next year? He saw he can't handle it. Why did he invite him? So the Rebbe says, because the next year Rabba thought that Rebbe Zeira was grown. Now he's on the level. Maybe now he's on the level. So he invited him. So the Rebbe, so why did Rebbe Zeira refuse? Very simply. Because Rebbe Zeira said, I have grown, but so have you. So the gap between us is still there. So it's not going to work. All right. I'm just bringing you an example of this idea of drunkenness, meaning just the delving into the secrets of Torah. So that's the one warning. One warning is referring to the rotzu, which is triggered by an attraction to delve deeper. The Yoshev oil, the Talmud Chacham. Okay, and that was said right away. Why was that? That warning, and this answers the question. That warning was given right away. Right? Because they went into the Beis HaMikdash. They did exactly that. Right? They went into the secrets of Torah and they died. So right away it had to be told, that's the wrong way to do it. Going to the secrets of Torah is beautiful, but it's got to be a rotzu with a shuv. Okay. The second warning was given much later. Why? Or is recorded much later. Because the second one in this week's parasha refers to the one who is running, not being attracted to, but he's running away. Why is he running away? Because of the risk factor of being in this world, right? And the failure that happens in this world. Where's that highlighted? So let's go back to what we said, that Rashi says that we have the Torah of the animals and the Torah of the people, right? Remember in the beginning we said that Parshas Shmini has the Torah of the animals, the Kashrus, and Parshas Tazria has the Torah of the... And we asked the question, what do you mean the Torah of the animals, Torah of the people? It's been Torah of the people for a whole Chumash. The Torah of the people that we're talking about, the Torah of the animals, is a different kind of Torah. It's the Torah which highlights the lowliness of this world. And it's the Torah that highlights the risk factor of this world, right? Which is, what's the Torah we're talking about? Rashi says there's a Torah of animals, there's a Torah of people. What are we talking about? Not talking about regular mitzvahs. Not talking about the mitzvah of putting on tefillin. We're talking about specific types of mitzvahs. Mitzvahs of treif and kosher, mitzvahs of pure and impure. And the Pasuk says, La havdil bein atomei ubein atorah. These mitzvahs were given to us for us to discern and to know how to make a difference, to reject that which is impure and to use that which is pure, to reject that which is treif and to use that which is kosher, and to understand how to use it, right? In other words, it's the Torah in Parshas Shmini after the story of Nadav and Avihu, and the Torah of Tazria Metzora, which is about Lashon Hara and Tzaras and Tumah and the impurity of different impurities that can happen to a person, and the bodily impurities, which is the end of Shmini, all these things. It highlights the bumpy road of engaging with this world, that we're in a world of Tumah and Tara. What are the mitzvahs we had before? Eating matzah, keeping yontif, bringing a korban, putting on tefillin. These are all holiness stuff. Yeah, you can do that in this world too. Suddenly we get exposed to a different type of Torah. A Torah where we are thrust into a world of tumah and tara. A world where the lines that are between that which is right and wrong, impure and pure, treif and kosher, is very blurry. And you have to really know how to discern and really know how to make a difference. Right? And that's when, after that Torah, and after living in the world where you have to do that Torah, the guy says, I don't need this. This is too hard. I'm giving up. Not only is it too hard, you know, the Rebbe points out, when do we read Achrei Mois besides the Shabbat? We read it on Yom Kippur, with this warning he's getting, right? And he's coming and he's doing a cheshvan ha-nefesh and he's doing tshuva and he says, you've thrust me into a world which I'm not succeeding at. I've failed. I look at the year gone by and I didn't always do the right thing. That's the world you want me to live in? Ugh, I want to run away from this world. Right? It's a tshuva, because tshuva comes from that. Right? The whole idea of power of tshuva is tshuva doesn't come from being attracted to Hashem. Tshuva comes from running away from bad, right? And he said, I want it, please. I want to be like a Berlozer ben Durdaya in the Gemara that did tshuva and he died. Okay, that was a specific case. But right? I want to just be in a world, don't leave me in this world of doubt and impurity and challenge. I want to go Ela Kodesh, I want to go to the holy world. Because I'm running, but it's me running away. That's when the warning comes, the second warning, the Achrei Mois warning, to that Jew. Al Yovoi B'chol Eis Ela Kodesh. You can't always go to the holiness. You can't live in holiness just because you want to escape. Because you've got to live in the world of risk. And you've got to try your best to make it work. Because that's when you're going to make a dwelling place for Hashem. That's the tachlis. That's the kavana. That's the intention of creation. That's why it's written in this week's parasha. Because it comes after being exposed to a world where not the Yoshev oil lives, but the Baal Esek lives. And that's when he suddenly says, I don't want this. I want to run away from this. And that's when the warning in this week's parasha says, yeah, you could do it on Yom Kippur. You could do it once in a while. You could do it on a Shabbos and Yom Tov, spiritually speaking. But al yovei b'chol eis, you can't do it all the time, because you've got to be in the world and make it work. All right.